Well, it's just after 8 o'clock and time for the penguin on top of your television set to explode.
How did he know that was going to happen?
It was an inspired guess. And now...
This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Episode 45, featuring Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and Laurie Watt. With special appearances by Pat Loika, Annie Ladner, and Dewey Bass. Are you looking for hot bibliophile temptation? Looking for the thrill of just one more good read? Find what you're looking for with Irene at girlonbookaction.blogspot.com. Oh, and Amanda does some movie reviews too. Panel discussion.
Oh, hi, hello. Yeah, so we're as we've mentioned before, we are sort of phasing out our theme shows, but this is something we could not pass up. This is we're doing a show. Sort of on a general topic about bad movies, and I could not think of a better person to talk to than the former Mrs. Algar, Laurie. Laurie, thanks for being with us.
Oh, hi there. How you doing?
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I didn't see you there.
You're tearing me apart, Laurie. So
your outlook is so different than mine.
Who are all you characters? So yeah, we're obviously quoting from, well, obviously I say, somehow people still haven't seen this yet. I don't get it. Tommy Wiseau's The Room, which we'll be discussing a little later in the show. Noted The Room expert Pat Loika will be with us for that.
Pat Loika is the one who introduced The Room to me, so.
It occurs to me now that we could probably have gotten Tommy Wiseau on the show.
Quite possible. Well, Laurie met him.
I have met him. He's, like I said before, he's a very, very interesting creature. He lives up to all your imagination about what he would be like in person. And he actually hit on my friend and I.
Nice.
I was wearing a pink shirt. She was wearing a green shirt. He said, "Hey, I like pink, but I like but I like green too."
Wow.
I can't do the accent very well, but that's...
He can't do the accent very well, so it's okay.
Everything I ever hoped for.
The thing is, you know how you watch The Sopranos and James Gandolfini just nails that Jersey accent, and then you see him in an interview and he's like, "Yes, well, I play Tony Soprano." I picture Tommy Wiseau going home to whoever he goes home to, and I don't know, his horrible wife or something, and so they bought it. They still think I'm foreign. I think it's an act.
Never know that in reality I'm a friend of Xander's here.
Very nice. So you met him. We do have a picture of that you've graciously told us we can put in the show notes. So we'll definitely do that.
I do, yes.
And we'll discuss this more in depth when Pat shows up. But that is the sort of movie that we're going to descend into here. And for the people that didn't hear last time you were on, you mentioned you do the, what is it, like a bad movie club?
Yeah, every Saturday we have a movie club, and my friends and I, about 8 to 10 people, we throw all sorts of topics in the bag, like, I don't know, prequels or movies made from TV shows, or just pick an actor's name and, you know, get two movies. So each week two of us draws our name, or our names get drawn out of the bag, and then we draw out a topic, and then those two people are charged with finding movies for that topic from the next week.
Sure.
It's usually movies that we haven't seen before, or movies that we think would truly torture all of our friends, that sort of thing. I don't think we actually like each other very much. That's why we do this every week.
Well, now, it sounds from the different movies that you've named and from the kind of movies that you've named, it sounds like you don't go for the standard, like, you know, new releases or the standard, like, Hollywood, you know. It seems like you really try to go off the beaten path and find strange, you know, just bizarre shit.
Right. And if we usually try to do that, there's one person in the club who revels in bringing things like Big Mama's House.
Ugh.
And we really have never forgiven him for that.
That's just cruel. I mean, bad movies is one thing, but
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you can laugh at it. I mean, obviously, the thing that springs to most people's mind when we talk about that is Mystery Science Theater. And, you know, obviously, you can bring sort of an MST caliber, just bad movie. But when it's something, this is, to me, why Riff Trax hasn't worked so well for me. Like, I love it when they do the shorts. But, I don't know, you watch them do a movie like I watched, what was it, Battlefield Earth. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
which is an awful. Has that ever come up in your club there? Or you guys aren't even that cruel.
I think it would be unanimous murder of whoever brought that.
Well, and rightfully so, because I watched it with the Riff Trax and it was still unbearable. The thing is, it's a Hollywood movie with a budget and kind of a production value, and I mean, it's awful. That's the only good thing I can say about it. I can't listen to Bill Corbett and Kevin Murphy and Mike Nelson making fun of a movie when it looks good. Like, it, you know, it wasn't good, but you know what I mean. Like, it looks like a Hollywood movie,
right? Mm-hmm.
That murky, grainy, bad movie look just wasn't there.
Mm. There's one like that is very entertaining. It's called The Happening.
Oh
God!
Have you ever seen that?
I've heard of it.
I Am Night Shyamalan.
Shyamalan, the love.
Oh, is that the movie that has the Are You Eyeing My Lemon Drink?
I don't remember that one.
There's a line, there's like a little, you know, internet meme or whatever you call it that went around. There's a horrible line where Marky Mark's in that movie, right?
Yes.
And he walks up to some, like, it's a southern lady. I don't know the context of the scene. If you've seen the movie, maybe you remember this. But it's a very slow scene, and it takes a really long time for him to approach her. And she looks up at him, and she says, "Are you eyeing my lemon drink?" What?
Yeah, your lemon drink.
And
I don't remember that. I remember they're in this big convoy to try and get away from this random wind murder thing.
Uh-huh.
Whatever it is that's happening. And
The Happening.
Whatever is going on. I don't know.
Right.
and the soldier jumps out of the convoy. Cheese and crackers!
Wow.
You know, instead of like Jesus Christ or something along
right.
those lines.
Oh, Christ. Oh.
God,
that's fantastic. I remember I went to go see that came out like last year, so I went to see like Iron Man or something, and there was a trailer for that. And I'm not a big M. Night Shyamalan fan anyway, and like I liked Sixth Sense, and that was about it. Unbreakable was good. I remember you and I went to see that, and we both went in expecting something entirely not what it was, and it was good, but it was completely not marketed as what it was.
What was another case of
kind of that Fight Club thing, kind of that. You watch the trailer and you think, oh, it's like a Bruce Willis action movie. And no, not really.
Oh, yeah.
No.
But it was good. But no, I remember seeing the trailer for this. And it was like, M from M. Night. Like, okay, whatever. And the trailer was so vague. It's like an occurrence is transpiring in a happenstance that is happening. Like, what?
In a world where things no, happen.
It wasn't even that specific. In a place where some
happening.
Yeah. And I watched it for however long a full-length trailer is, like 2 full minutes, and I had no clue what was supposed to happen in this movie at all.
So people, like, die, and then the wind, like, rustles through the trees, and people get really scared. I wasn't really clear on what was happening.
That's and you've seen the whole movie.
I saw a clip of that where people were, like, running away from the wind.
From the wind. And not like a hurricane, not like scary wind. Just normal, just wind.
Like a summer's breeze.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to go, M. Night Shyamalan.
M. Night Shyamalan.
M. Night Phenomenon. All right. Laurie, before we get too deep into your bad movies here, we have a mail here from a mutual acquaintance of ours. I wanted to get this out of the way so we could have some fun, because it's from Flonk.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Fun can never happen when he's.
And I like that you've been on our show all of 15 minutes, and you know. I say Flonk, and you're like, yep.
Yep.
Let's come to this.
Yeah. What's worse is
let's
this.
Let's get this over with.
Yeah. Well, what's worse is it's Flonk being a you know, a total, like, hey, look at me. And he says, "Dear Trillion," which has been your, you know, your alter ego online from time to time. Do you have any good stories about internet friends of yours arm wrestling washed up celebrities?
Not that I recall.
Okay.
No.
Well, Flonk, thanks for writing.
I don't think I have any internet friends.
Well, who really? Who, I mean, meeting people on the internet. Come on. I mean, I've heard a lot of sketchy things about that internet.
You can't trust people on the internet.
Well, that's,
no, I don't think so.
That's certainly for true. For true. That's what it's for.
For true or for awesome.
Right. So The Happening is actually kind of a bigger budget movie, but I'm getting the impression you also watched more of the dregs, more of the bottom of the barrel type stuff too, right? Like the
Yes. let's see here. One of my favorites in the recent years, besides The Room, mm-hmm. It's called The Howling 2, or Your Sister is a Werewolf, or or Werewolf Bitch.
Oh, Werewolf Bitch.
Nice. Werewolf.
it stars Sybil Danning. I went to see this at the Alamo, oh, by the way, the Alamo is a theater chain, a wonderful theater chain that I just love to death.
And this is in Austin. I don't think we've mentioned that you're down in Austin, Texas right now.
Right. Austin, Texas. Theater where they do a lot of original events, dig up a lot of old movies, invite stars from these movies to visit during the screenings, Q&As.
Austin seems to be like the hip place to be, like, you know, where that stuff is still happening, and it's not kind of the sellout kind of Sundance thing where you guys actually have like some festival, like SPX that's down there?
SPX is in DC.
South by Southwest, that's it.
South by Southwest.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah. Similar acronyms, I get confused there. Yep.
Yeah.
You still get people that aren't like huge names, they're kind of like mid-level, like, you know, people that might actually talk to you.
Oh yeah, like really cool B actors.
Right.
Like when I went to see this movie, The Howling 2, or mm-hmm. Your Sister is a Werewolf, or Werewolf Bitch.
So whenever you say that title, you have to say all three, of course.
Right.
Okay.
When I went to see that at the Alamo, they had Sybil Danning there answering questions. And
nice.
She's still a very handsome woman even now, and she's in probably her early 60s.
Okay.
But this movie stars her.
Who is she? Would I know her?
What has she been in?
I mean, I'm looking her up on the Wikipedia right now, but I'm just off the top of my head. Like, is she somebody I should know?
To the internet.
Probably not. I didn't really know her before this movie.
Okay, fair enough. Oh, Jesus.
I think Reb Brown was in there, too.
She's looking a little, haggard there. Now, this might just be a bad picture, but she's very clearly got a fake rack going, and it's very exposed in this picture, and, wow. Okay, I'm sorry. In any case,
that's okay.
She was also in a movie called Werewolf Women of the SS. Apparently.
Oh yes.
Ah!
Was she in Ilsa? Was she in those movies?
Ilsa, she Wolf of the SS.
Is that her?
I don't know, but I love those movies.
Awesome.
When famous Mark Darren and I take a drink, worked at a video store. We had these movies, and it was like a video store on a Navy base. There were not many videos there. And
but there's lots of copies of Top Gun.
Yes, actually, and Navy SEALs. Mm-hmm. Like that joke in Clerks. Like, hey, that's my job. But we had Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS, which is like softcore porn about this like Nazi dominatrix. And then there was like Ilsa. There was like a whole series of Ilsa movies. But
Ilsa Goes to Summer Camp.
Ilsa Goes Somewhere Cheap. But no, it's not the same. Anyway, so back to the movie. I'm sorry. You said Christopher Lee?
Christopher Lee. Really, I don't know, slumming it in there.
Well, he's one of those. Christopher Lee's one of those sandwich actors. One of the, you know, you got a sandwich, he'll be in it. I mean, he's a classy guy, but, you know.
Want me to play a vampire in what?
He tried his damnedest to class it up, but it didn't really work. And so it's a really good movie. I would recommend it. It's not a good movie per se, but entertaining, very entertaining. The best part of the movie, in my opinion, is when the werewolf, who is Sybil Danning, uh-huh. she starts howling, and this midget, his eyes explode right out of his head.
Wow,
it's awesome.
Like because he's surprised, or because like the frequency of the howl like blew them out, or.
Yes, the frequency, like an opera singer.
Wow, you know, like breaking a glass. Right, of course. Yeah. Wow. That's, wow.
I don't know how accurate that is to the traditional werewolf myth.
Well, you know, we know some experts. We need to run that by them.
I saw werewolf exploding eyes outside of Trader Vic's.
His hair was perfect. Wow, I'm looking at this now, and it just—I mean, everything about it screams class, from the cover art to the Cover art.
Oh, and there's a there's a werewolf orgy as well, which you will, I'm sure, enjoy.
Oh, no doubt. I'm a big werewolf orgy.
And they're all hairy and stuff. It's awesome.
Oh, fantastic. Wow. It's based on a novel, according to Wikipedia here.
I did not know that.
However, it says it's largely unrelated to the Howling 2 novel, but it's written by the same guy.
The movie's never as good as the book.
So that's what your top pick, would you say, or just
it's one of my favorites,
a notable pick.
Notable.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so it sounds like you cross a lot of genres with this thing you guys do. I mean,
the worse the better. It doesn't matter what kind it is, as long as it fits to the topic, then it's all good.
Well, and something I think we learned, and we're all big fans of Mystery Science Theater, so you know, we're kind of on the same page here. One thing that show made me realize is just how bad specifically science fiction and horror tend to be.
Oh yeah.
Because they could dig through that bin for another 100 years. I mean, you could find a bad straight drama or, you know, whatever, but really, you know, that's where the bulk of your terrible movies is going to be is like specific genre stuff like sci-fi, fantasy and horror.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's why I had avoided it for so long.
Right. Well, yeah. And that's, I mean, you know, years ago when we were together, you kind of said to me that you didn't like science fiction, and I could not believe that. I mean it's just such a vast, you know, thing, and what it turned out to be was you weren't exposed to good science fiction, and so I very carefully, because I didn't want to lose you on this. I didn't, like, because if I showed you one bad thing, you'd be like, nope, I was right, fuck off. So I think the first thing I showed you was like Alien.
Like, yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah, we're good. You know, great movie, strong female presence. Like, you know, okay, good to go. And then from there, we kind of let in, like, okay, most of it's crap, but it's still good. And people have done that for me for horror, because I felt the same way about horror. I was like, no, it's just most horror suck. It's not that all horror sucks.
A lot of horror sucks.
Yeah.
True.
But I mean, I would imagine in the course of your experiment that you've probably watched a lot of, like, particularly bad, like, horror and sci-fi. Is that... would that be accurate?
That's very accurate. Yeah, the horror movies, it's hard with my friends, because I like horror movies, but I can't watch torture horror movies, because
What are you talking about? Like the, I mean, I don't really know. I've heard that the, what is it, like the Saw movies?
Saw or Hostel.
Right. Those are just like a bunch of gore that's supposed to be scary, but it's really just gory.
It's just gory. It's just people who can't get away just getting tortured and murdered. Yeah. And
I have better things to do than watch that.
Well, some people, no, you don't.
I have better films. I could be watching new Star Trek.
Okay. I mean, I get what you're trying to say, and I appreciate what you're trying to say, but we all know you don't have anything better to do.
I think sitting in a room and listening to myself breathe in and out is probably a better use of my time than watching Saw 5.
That's fair.
Yeah. Matt, are you going to take that from him?
I usually do, yeah.
Nice. Look, you can try. You could, if you want to, you know, if you want to take his, like, give him some backbone, by all means. But you
know. I just wanted to stir something up, and it didn't work.
No. So, but okay. So you don't really like the torture type movies, but I mean, there must be, you know, there's still lots. There must be like a lot of like rubber mask movies or like, you know, werewolf orgy movies. I mean, you know.
Well, it's such a huge genre.
Yeah. Well, I don't have any particular favorites in the horror genre. I do have some favorite tropes in the horror movies, though.
Oh yeah, she showed me this. Like, we were doing a little prep. We were doing a little, like, kind of spitballing back and forth. Here's some stuff I might be able to talk about. And she gave me these lists of very peculiar, very specific things that reoccur in these movies. I'm like, what? These are cliches? I've never heard of this. Yeah. So give us a sample here.
Yeah.
Okay. So say early in a horror movie, they show up at the, you know, the deserted cabin or the really creepy looking castle, or they show up, I don't know, wherever they're going to show up and get murdered at. Yeah. Sure. The X Factory, the cemetery. Yeah. You know, early on, they're going to say, oh, my cell phone isn't working.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which I haven't, like, I watched a lot of these when I was a teenager, you know, back in the Stone Age, and there weren't cell phones yet. So I guess that's sort of essential to the plot now. They have to address that immediately. Like, you didn't have to do that back when Jason and Freddy were chasing you, but now you have to, oh, wait, cell phone. Nope, don't work.
Cell phones have led to the number one reason why monsters aren't eating teenagers anymore.
So if you live in a low coverage zone, I'd get out of there as soon as you can.
Well, we both left, so take that, Southern Maryland.
Okay, and also if you have say a maid,
uh-huh,
and she's a Latina, she is also like a canary in the coal mine. If she starts crossing herself and saying things like "Dios mío," you get out of there as soon as possible.
Wow.
Yes, it's she's sort of like a variation on the wise. What is it that Warren Ellis calls them? The magical Negroes. Yes. You know how, like, in movies where the white people are so dumb or they just aren't used to the supernatural occurrences.
Sure.
They have to go to somebody of color who apparently doesn't have science or something.
Right.
You know, whatever the trope calls for. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. The Shining. Yeah. So now, let me ask you this. Does it have to be a maid? Does it have to be, like, because in The Shining, that dude was, like, what, like a groundskeeper or something?
Cook.
Yeah. Does it have to be someone in like a subservient position? Like, if some bad supernatural shit was coming here to me in my largely Hispanic and Asian neighborhood, should I be looking to my neighbors or should I be looking to, you know, the groundskeeper, like the guy taking out the trash? You know what I mean? Like, is the fact that he has a shit job, does that make him somehow better at detecting these things?
Or is it
just that they're brown?
Maybe it's just they're brown, I guess.
Okay. It's probably a combination of two, because, like, then it could lead to the reason they don't listen to that person.
Oh, that could be, yeah, because you think they're not wise, but it's like a Yoda thing, where it's like, oh, you should have listened to the guy you didn't think was, yeah.
See, I can
whatever
lift
you clean expert toilets for a living.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Whatever you say, hedge guy.
But he's, you know, I would listen to anything Scatman Crothers said, but that's a whole other thing.
We smug white teenagers don't need advice.
All right,
let's
what
fix our cell phones.
Where my cell phone didn't work. All right, what else you got on that list?
Sort of in the line of the Mexican maid. Uh-huh. If the movie's more progressive, then it's going to have the heroine or the hero going to the library, or maybe cracking open the attic, and they're going to go and they're going to look at ancient woodcuts depicting whatever supernatural force they're coming up against.
Woodcuts.
I can guarantee you some sort of brown person or woodcuts.
Or a woodcut.
Okay.
So these things are interchangeable. And a non-white person and a woodcut, as far as, like, you know, if you're using your build a screenplay software, you come to the point in the flow chart where you could choose.
Sometimes the person consults the woodcuts and then goes to a brown person.
Hey, brown person, can you interpret this woodcut for me?
I just need some confirmation, that's all.
Oh, Dios mío.
And to be clear, we're really trying not to be racist here. Like, we're just observing.
We're making fun of films that are already racist.
Okay. Somebody probably Ushwin.
The patterns, thank you.
Right. Somebody probably Ushwin is screaming and calling us racist right now. We're just we're calling them racist. It's okay.
Ushwin, you look at the patterns and you call me back later.
Also, if you can send me a recipe for eyeball soup, I'd really appreciate it. All right, anyway.
Not sure where that came from.
You're going to get your ass kicked.
From India. All right.
Okay. On that note.
Oh, a few other I have other movie tropes that I like a lot.
Okay.
Yes. Not necessarily, not necessarily horror.
Okay.
Another good one is outrunning natural disasters. Yeah. If you watch the Jeff Fahey movie, Absolute Zero, uh-huh, or the, was it Jake Gyllenhaal in that The Day After Tomorrow movie?
Yeah.
They both outrun the freezing cold.
Wow. A wave of cold is coming toward you and you can just run?
They outrun a frost.
Well, from what I could tell, the movie 2012 was entirely about outrunning weather.
That is certainly what the trailers made it look like. That is true.
I saw that movie on a friend's request for mm-hmm. his birthday, and I almost shot myself in the head.
Laurie.
Was that bad, eh?
It was bad.
I need to tell you something. That is no friend. That is not a well-wisher either. They wish you specific harm.
Well, that is the same person who brought Big Mama's House.
Oh,
yeah, no, that
That person's movie privileges need to be cut off. I'm sorry.
That
that's just all
that person is a monster.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
That person is history's greatest monster. 2012, really? Did he was it an ironic thing? Did he think it was like, oh, let's go laugh at this goofy movie? Or did he really think it was going to be a good movie?
Guys.
He wanted to go laugh at it.
Okay. Or is that...
I don't understand. They outrun a hole.
Now, are you sure? Like, do you know this person well enough to say that? Or was it like, hey... Would it be like me turning to Matt and saying, hey, you know what would be funny is if we kissed?
You mean that would be truthful?
Well, that would
You're
be
actually
funny.
Hoping for that to happen?
No, I'm saying, you know, obviously it would there would be undertones there, you know, in that example.
Hmm.
Who started that rumor anyway?
That's interesting.
They would have established that we did.
All right. So back to that list of yours.
Yeah, so that person's going to get murdered off the island. So
I like that you took what should be a cliche and put your own spin on it, so it's okay again. Murdered off the island. Because my first reaction was like, really? You use it? Oh, all right then.
Murdered, eh? Well, that's okay.
Sometimes exile just doesn't do it.
No, and you know, you one of the things I always liked about you is you're a very stabby lady.
Most people don't like that.
It's one of the things that drew me to you in the first place. You're very stabby.
Danger of being stabbed.
All right.
Speaking of violent nature, I also, some of my favorite movies, and I'm a big fan of Conan, for more reasons than this, but my favorite scene in Conan is when he punches that camel in the face. I like seeing animals get punched in the face.
Oh, that's horrible.
Camels deserve it, though, is the thing.
Well, that's true. Camels are dicks, but and Terry Pratchett backs me up on that one.
But, camels are history's greatest monster that lives in sandier areas.
Camels are always, when you get on them, they're trying to take you to go see 2012. No.
Should I say, for the purposes of the podcast, they aren't real animals getting punched in the face?
Well, obviously they're not, but it's still, you're still reacting to the fact that, you know, your mind thinks that it is.
I don't know. I'd buy Schwarzenegger punching out a camel.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't even part of the movie.
No, in fact, he's probably made special dispensation for himself as governor of California to, you know, bring him a camel. And I refuse to do a bad Arnold Schwarzenegger impression here.
Oh, so, please don't.
Yeah. But I just assume that, you know, every morning he gets up in the governor's mansion and bring me a camel.
He still has the sword from Conan in his office and a big little display thingy.
That's fantastic.
See, that's cool.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
I mean, say what you will about the guy. And I actually, believe it or not, I've heard from several Californians that he's actually turned out to be a fairly decent governor. But that's, apart from that, that's actually pretty cool.
Politics.
He's a Republican, though. I'm okay with that. We get hate mail when I mention Democrats. But we should be good now. So, yeah, it's a whole thing. Anyway.
Yeah, so, okay. Oh, and there's also a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. I believe it's something about Chance or something, where he plays a Cajun guy who he's running through the swamp to get away from these people who are chasing him, and this eagle or a hawk or something attacks him, and he grabs it by the neck and punches it. And just, yes!
Wow.
Just and so you, unnecessary.
You loved that, huh?
I just love the animal violence.
Take that, nature. I'll fully cop to the fact that I'm just a big wuss, but in movies, when I see animals get hurt, and I'm not talking like when you see a puppy get hurt, because that hurts everybody. Like, everybody's kind of sad by that.
When a puppy dies, the world dies
with
it.
But I swear to Christ, I'm not making this up. When I watch, like, Attack of the Clones, and they're in the, they're in the arena, and they're fighting the big, obviously CG monsters. And they start hurting them. I just, like, oh, it's not his fault.
What? Really? Wow.
Yeah, that's just how much of a wuss I am with, like, hurting animals. It's like, no, don't hurt. It's not, he's just, no, aw.
Wow. I think I used to pretend to respect you.
You never even pretended. What are you talking about?
Dude, one of the finest things about bad horror movies is watching animals get killed, especially if they're big and eat people for, like, an hour and a half.
No, that's different. That's, you know. Those guys deserve to die. That's fine.
He was asking for it. He ate all those campers.
Right. So is there any other, like, punching animals, or is that just the only two examples you have?
Oh, Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, but that doesn't count.
Yeah, well,
when it's obviously played for laughs,
anyway. But
well, I apart from that, I mean, I don't think it counts because that movie's obviously a, you know, over the top kind of farcy kind of, you know, like the fact that it's in a movie like Conan the Barbarian, you know.
Mm. Oh, right, right, right.
That's what makes it great. I'm just wondering if movies that try to be taken seriously also feature that.
Not that I've seen recently. I think many people are too scared of PETA and animal rights groups.
I think movies need more eagle punching.
Yeah. I think, yes,
Matt, let's get married.
All right, then.
Well, hey, why not? You know, that red paint will scrape right off. It's okay. You know, we know a soapstress. We can get some soap and scrub that right off of you. It's not a problem. What else? What else is on your tropes list there?
I'm out of tropes for the moment. I know there's a whole lot of them. I just have to keep watching, but sure. I'll come up with more for later or something.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fine. So, I mean, how about like sci-fi? Have you seen particularly bad like sci-fi movies? Or
no.
Do you tend to steer clear of those just because you've seen enough bad sci-fi already?
I kind of space out with a bad sci-fi.
That's fair.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
What I've been watching most recently are the terrible Japanese movies.
Ah, yes. You mentioned one of these briefly in the pre-show, but did you ever figure out which one it was? I know you were kind of.
And I cannot find the name of it.
Oh, online. That's a shame. Well, describe it to us, and maybe somebody out there will find this for us.
Mm.
Okay, so it's about this dysfunctional Japanese family.
Mm-hmm.
The father violently rapes one of the daughters. She's in a back room in bloody rags. There's a second daughter who tries to keep everything together. She goes to visit the homeless, toothless mom down by the riverbank, the mom who breastfeeds a baby doll.
Now, is she, I mean, I can't believe I'm asking this so graphically, but, you know, I'm trying to be a journalist here. Is she lactating?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. So, I mean, there's actual milk happening. It's not just she's holding it.
It's a Japanese movie.
Well, I don't know. I'm just, is she holding it to her breast or is she actually like feeding it milk?
She's actually feeding it milk.
All right.
Made for Japanese businessmen to violently masturbate to.
Okay, gotcha.
There's also the other daughter. She is kidnapped by the guy who is in love with her into his limo, and he forces a catheter into her and drinks the pee right out of her body.
Forces a catheter.
Yes.
Forgive the imagery here, but like a Capri Sun.
Right, like a milkshake.
Right. No, I'm thinking like one of those, you know, like a juice box where you have to,
stab it a little bit?
Yeah, like the sharpened straw and you have to stab it in right. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, I know somebody out there in your depraved little audience knows the name of this movie.
Well, let's call this the first contest we've ever had. We'll give a prize. We'll give a real prize. Like, seriously, we're working on some merchandise. I don't know. I can't commit to anything yet, but a shirt or something. If you can actually figure out what this movie is.
Okay.
And I mean, and Laurie has to verify it. Like, you can't just throw me a title that fits this description. It has to be the movie she's thinking of.
Awesome. We can verify it, yes.
Now that I've bribed them with something, maybe they'll actually respond. If we didn't lose them with that juice box imagery, maybe, yeah. So, yeah, obviously, we've mentioned this on the show before, and you know my attitude toward the Sinister East. I don't trust them, but, you know, we'll never forget.
There's a lot of hate mail coming our way for this show.
This is all me, by the way. This is not these two. This is all me.
Animal lovers.
Yeah.
Mexicans.
Indians. Well, Ashwin, anyway. I don't know. I don't know if there's any other Indians listening. Yeah. No, I was just roundabout sort of bringing up Pearl Harbor because that's Matt's birthday.
It's true.
Oh. You were born in 1941?
Yes, I was, actually. I was always very upset because the bombing of Pearl Harbor always really sort of outshone my birthday.
Wow, you look pretty good for your age.
No, thank you.
So, what is it your grandfather calls you
every year?
Every December 7th.
I get a call at about 7 to 8 in the morning. Hello? Matthew. Hi, Grandpa. You know what today is? Yeah, it's the bombing of Pearl Harbor. That's right. You remember that.
And that's it. Like,
People fought for your freedom.
And they're Canadian. Like, they don't really, you know, like, yeah, they sympathize with us or whatever, but it's not like their base got bombed. It was, you know, no. It was our thing. But anyway, the point is, like, you're watching Japanese movies. That's obviously where some of the stranger...
There's definitely strangers happening there.
Yes. So you've dipped into that a bit. What else you got?
There's another movie called Visitor Q.
Okay.
About another... Familiar. Yes, you might have heard of it, from 2001. Another movie about a dysfunctional Japanese family. But this...
Now, in fairness, most movies in America are about dysfunctional American families. Like, that's not
true.
Especially unusual.
It's just the level of dysfunction. I mean, okay. If the last movie was any indication.
Well, this movie, like I said, dysfunctional. This visitor Q, comes and visits the family, stays with them, helps them to embrace their dysfunction.
Uh-huh.
Together.
Well, that's so beautiful.
There's some corpse screwing.
Now, is that the dysfunction that they're embracing?
Necrophilia is what they're embracing, yes. Embrace the necrophilia.
Necrophilia. There's also some lactation sex. Lots and lots of incest.
Well, I'm sold.
And the part that I liked about it was they just embraced it. They're like, yes, we're dysfunctional, but this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna do it together. We're gonna be a big happy family.
Wow.
That's
sort of beautiful.
It had the mom standing at the camera, like, you know, going full guns with her lactating boobs.
Wow.
Just like all over the kitchen for some reason.
All over the kitchen. Wow. That's I mean,
breakfast is ready, kids.
And to be clear, this is not pornography per se. This is just like maybe an R-rated, like I mean, if it's a foreign film it might be unrated, but it's not intended to be proper like pornography. It's a story.
Art.
No, okay. It's not pornography.
Okay. So this isn't necessarily for sexual whatever. It's just there.
That's an added side bonus.
Well, whatever you do in the privacy of your own home is none of my business.
All right. Pretty sure nothing to do with that. Although you did have me at the incest thing, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. Wow. Another good one called Rape Bus.
Wait, wasn't that one of Patton Oswalt's jokey titles when he heard about Deathbed? No, Rape Stove. Sorry.
Al, can we call the episode Rape Bus?
Well, no, the title's obviously already taken, Matt.
Speed 3, Rape Bus.
Wow.
We haven't hit the climax of the show yet. Let's keep going.
Did you watch Rape Bus, or did you just want to bring up the title?
No, I watched it. Yeah, it was a movie about a bus full of Japanese schoolgirls. Of course. They get hijacked by a couple of guys. Rape them.
Of course.
And rape them. And then it looked like, oh, there's two guys coming to the rescue. They're chasing him down, gonna, you know, rescue the girls. Well, get in there and they decide to rape them too.
Oh, good.
So it's mostly about
rape. And a bus. Well, really, I mean, you know, for all its flaws, I mean, obviously, at least they're straightforward. That's,
it certainly lives
what you
up
see is what you get.
Yeah, with females for hire. Wow. So there's no revenge at all. Like, there's no comeuppance for the rapists. It's just...
No.
Wow.
Nope.
That is... Wow. Mm-hmm. Is this a popular... I mean, do you know? I mean, you probably don't know, but is this a popular movie in Japan?
Big in Japan.
I don't know. It's a little bit of an older movie. I would say probably from the 80s.
Okay.
But I did notice in a lot of Japanese movies that rape does seem to be a big theme.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's... Seems to be a thing.
Yeah.
Or it could just be the movies that I'm watching.
Well, if you stopped renting from the rape section of the video place, maybe that wouldn't happen.
You're obviously not going to Blockbuster because...
No.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, you know, Blockbuster's going under. They might be looking for new ways to bring people in.
That could very well be. Yeah. God. I'm not even sure. Like, I don't want you to top that, but I mean, what? What else do you have?
Another Japanese movie? Well, I'm pretty sure it's Japanese. It's called Cruel Restaurant.
Okay.
And let me see here. Let me make sure I'm getting the right name.
Yeah, absolutely. Those
teenage girls that go to a restaurant get raped.
Let's see here. No, it is Cruel Restaurant. And it features a woman who can make dumplings. You know, those little Asian dumpling things.
Yeah, yeah.
With her vagina.
Oh, well. The whole movie's about that, huh?
Yes, it's like the trick where you can put a cherry stem in your mouth and spit it out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, tie it in a knot.
So she sticks like whatever those things are made of, like dough or whatever. And, Wow. She gives birth to a little dumpling.
She does. That's how she does it.
Ah, well. Yeah.
Just be careful where you eat, okay?
Oh, Christ. Well, at least it's not called Rape Dumpling, I guess.
I guess so.
There's our title.
She does get raped in the movie, so.
Of course she does.
Of course she does.
Oh, God damn it, Japan. Do we need to... No, never mind. Never mind.
Why can't you masturbate to normal things?
We're not gonna get into all that.
Yeah, you best move on from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, do you ever watch anything that's not dark and rapey?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Because, I mean, we were together for some time. I've known you as a friend as well as we were married for a while. You know, you have a weird fascination with that kind of thing. But, you also can just laugh at bad things, plain, you know. It doesn't have to be grotesque. There must be some more lighthearted bad movies that you've seen.
Oh, yeah. And I'll bring up two of my favorite actors of the moment. Or two actors that I'm really fascinated with.
Okay.
One is Gary Busey.
Okay.
Second is Crispin Glover.
Crispin Glover.
Or as certain people insist on calling him, including his middle name, Crispin Hellion Glover.
It's a true middle name. It's his middle name.
Oh, I believe that. But I'm amused that people insist on including his middle name.
Not him.
Right. The only thing, I mean, obviously the Back to the Future thing, but the only real thing, and I think we've talked about this on the show before. Laurie, have you seen his appearance? It was like 87 on the Letterman.
Yeah, where he like kicks.
Well, he almost kicks him. He's just ranting and people are always bad saying, and I can kick. And he like kicks at Dave's head and it's like a centimeter from his head. And it's just, yeah, that guy's fucking nuts. That was like 20 years ago.
I'm gonna check in the top 10.
Yeah. So what's he up to these days, old Crispin Glover?
Well, I recently saw Simon Says.
Okay.
It's him, and I believe he plays twins.
Oh, good.
One twin is deceased.
So he plays a dead body, and then another guy.
Well, he doesn't let anyone know the other twin is deceased. He just plays both twins.
Oh,
it's weekend Ernie's.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And it takes place in the Deep South, so it gives him a chance to do his Foghorn Leghorn impression.
Wow.
I wish I could do it justice. You just have to rent it. What are y'all doing here? You know, that kind of.
Yeah. Boy, I said, boy!
Right. Exactly.
Wow. Callback, son.
Callback, that is. Yeah.
That is actually a horror movie.
Wow.
He hunts people down in the woods and kills them.
Why not?
Yeah.
And it's just
rape anybody.
Yeah, he's just fascinating to watch, and
he and you know, yeah, he's ridiculous for, but he definitely has an intensity about him. That guy.
Mm-hmm.
He really looks like a guy that you don't want to sit next to on the bus. I mean, even playing George McFly, you kind of get that out of him. Like, oh, that's my dad, huh? Wow.
Yeah, he's pretty creepy. He has this thing going on that I wish I were a fly on the wall, but I wouldn't want to actually be around him.
Right. No. God, no.
Well, you know, Marty, sometimes you just got to take things. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay there, Dad.
You creep me out there, man.
Let's just say it, if you hadn't gone back in time, I might have had to beat Biff to death with a shovel.
Nice.
That would have been a shame.
I'm not, you're not really sounding like Crispin Glover there, but you're going in a whole new direction that I got to say is new territory for you there. So there's that. And of course, the great Gary Busey. We all know what a train wreck that guy is.
He apparently had gotten into a motorcycle accident a number of years ago, mm-hmm. and has since then just kind of spiraled out into insanity.
Well, and I would say of the, you know, of the crackpot actors, of the people who are known for their insanity, I would say he's way up there.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever seen I'm with Busey?
I have not. I've heard of it. Mm-hmm. Matt, have you seen that?
No, I've heard of it, too.
Okay.
It's this really awesome TV show where he and this kid who just, like, this neurotic Jewish kid, I believe, and this kid is just like, oh, it kind of reminds me of Woody Allen.
Right.
Is paired up with Gary Busey, who wants him to just, you know, do insane things like walk on the edge of cliffs and ride a motorcycle down a hill and jump off of it, whatever. Oh. But
that's fantastic.
It's awesome. But anyway, my favorite movie recently with Gary Busey in it is Bulletproof.
Okay.
Most of the movie's pretty okay. He plays a police detective called Frank McBain.
Okay.
And anyway, my favorite.
Made it from retirement.
Damn it, I'm a loose cannon. he plays this detective whose favorite thing is to call people Butthorn.
Butthorn?
So, Butthorn.
All right.
So Danny Trejo plays a bad guy in this movie. He looks up and he says, "Oh my God, what's that?" And Danny Trejo is also awesome, by the way.
And how do I know that name? Who is Danny Trejo?
Yeah.
He played Machete in the little short.
In what? Grindhouse. Oh, okay. Machete. I didn't actually see Grindhouse, but.
Oh, okay. He's been in a bunch of other things. But okay. That is my favorite thing of his.
Okay.
Yeah, so Danny Trejo looks up and says, "Holy crap, what's that?" And Gary Busey, up about to jump down from the rafters and tackle Danny Trejo, says, "I'm your worst nightmare, Butthorn."
Butthorn. Wow.
Yeah, it's just wonderful.
Cheese. That is
cheese and crackers.
Butthorn. Wow. Are you eyeing my lemon drink, Butthorn? That might be our title. Okay.
He also is like, "It's bird season, Butthorn."
Oh, man.
I didn't pay attention until he said Butthorn.
Yeah, that's just one of those. You're kind of doing laundry or something else, and that happens. Whoa, I'm. Did he just say Butthorn?
Sorry, Gary Busey, I wasn't paying attention, but did you just say Butthorn?
Yes, I did.
Oh.
All right, well, unless you have anything else on your list, I think it's about time to bring in our first sort of supplemental guest. We have a few special correspondents, let's say, people who wanted to talk about specific bad movies.
Okay.
So, do you have anything else? Anything you definitely wanted to mention before we get to this part, or
nothing offhand?
All right then. All right, on the line we have our first sort of supplemental guest here, Laurie. You are acquainted with this gentleman.
I know Pat quite well.
Yes, Pat Loika, Pilo. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi guys.
Hi, Pat.
Pat, you have come here specifically to discuss one particular awful movie, and we mentioned this at the top of the show. Tommy Wiseau's masterpiece, The Room.
Yes.
Let's
greatest movie ever.
Well, explain the logic behind that assertion, please.
This is the only movie that has the power to make your friends hate you after you introduce them to it.
This is a movie where I mean I'd heard through you, through Laurie, through some other people how bad it was. I got the riff tracks, I watched it, that was funny. Our friend Dave, our voice guy, Dave Fields, was out here for a visit. I'm like, "Dave, you got to see this. This is a bad movie." And I made the mistake of not doing the riff tracks the second time, and we just watched the movie straight.
Oh.
And really, putting the movie on for a guy friend, you realize just how many awkward, long sex scenes there are, and you're like, oh.
There's like five in the first 40 minutes.
Yeah. Wow. This is still going on. This is,
What the hell are you doing with that rose?
Again.
And he's never actually, if you notice, it's not anatomically correct because he's going at her thigh.
I
I never really wasn't looking terribly close. I mean, I was trying to check her out. She's not hideous or anything, but I didn't really catch that. That's mm-hmm. Now, is it him? Is it really, like, did they get a stunt butt or something? Or
why would you choose that stunt butt?
That's the butt I want for my movie.
Now, let's for those in the audience who may not have actually heard of this film, Pat, as the reigning expert, and Laurie, you back him up. Mm. Please explain what the hell we're talking about.
Okay. Well, The Room is a movie that was written, directed, and stars Mr. Tommy Wiseau, who had originally intended to put this out as a novel and then a play. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what happened. Oh. And why, but he got to that point where he decided to put it out as a serious dramatic movie. But then when they screened it, it was so bad, they started marketing it as a black comedy.
He should make a musical.
Oh, God, oh. Don't give him any ideas.
Oh, God, I would see that so often.
You know, and I'm no fan of musicals. I've expressed this many times on the show, but I probably would watch that.
I would watch till my eyes bled, and I hate musicals.
I will actually watch it too, just because it's got Tommy Wiseau in it. I can't say that.
Now, Tommy
singing, all dancing, Tommy Wiseau.
Now, this guy is obviously not from around here, but it's very.
What makes you say that?
Well,
yeah.
I think he will deny that. He says he's an all American boy.
And that's all he says. He's from America.
What are you talking about? I'm from America.
Obviously. Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, as we mentioned previously, Laurie's met the guy, and apparently he's exactly the same way in person mm-hmm. as you would expect him to be. Mm-hmm.
He's a pretty sharp dresser, I might add. an 8-ball jacket on.
Wow. Okay, now let's...
Like two belts that were crisscrossed like they were gun belts.
Wow.
And like the saggy pants. I think it was a bolo tie too, he strikes me as a
bolo tie type. He really does. Like, he's you think bolo tie, that's the guy, you know, still buying him, still keeping him in business. So now the plot of this movie, really, this movie comes off as, I'm 15, my girlfriend just broke up with me, I want to show everyone what a great guy I am and what a bitch she is. Only this guy's like 40.
That's pretty much it. I think he was trying to deal with some issues, and he thought that it would be a great way to, doing a movie would be a great way to do it.
Well, and through the entire film, the main character, played by him, is walking around, and everyone's constantly talking about what a great guy he is. Johnny's such a great guy. That line must be in the movie 70,000 times.
He's a good man. He provides for you.
And on the other hand, his girlfriend.
Why doesn't he hit me?
I did not hit her.
I did not.
Oh, hi, Pat. But the thing is, like, the characters are so one-dimensional. Like he's the great guy.
Giving them too much credit.
Yeah, well, all right. But, like, the girlfriend does absolutely nothing redeeming through the entire thing. Like, she is just a duplicitous bitch, and that's it. There's no gray area. There's no nothing. She's just utterly irredeemable, and it's like,
but she's so sexy.
Are you 12 in your red dress? Now, this has turned into sort of the modern like a Rocky Horror thing, right, where they do like the midnight showings. And Laurie, that's what you went to in Austin, like
a midnight showing, and then he did Q&A beforehand,
right? But like we said, he ran off so he couldn't see you trashing his masterpiece.
Right, he's cagey enough to know to claim it was a comedy, but deep down he didn't want it to end up this way. Right. So he's very, very bitter during the Q&A.
Oh, really?
Insulting a lot of people.
Well, do you remember like specific answers that gave you that impression, or just an overall kind of feel?
Well, he didn't seem to understand that the Q&A portion of the night would be a different audience each time. Because he got really mad with us that we would ask the same questions that people in a previous showing had asked.
Nice.
You know?
Weren't you here last time?
I answered this last time.
Yeah, well, there's... Wow, that's fantastic.
Oh, God.
There's, it seems to me that, I don't know. From what I hear, he spent like a fair amount of money, like something like $5 million. Is that right?
You think you're around $5 to $6 million.
And there's no like there's no evidence in the movie that, that anything close to that was spent. The only thing I can see is the thing was apparently shot in L.A. and he composited in San Francisco to make it look like it was there for no reason whatsoever. Like there's nothing about the movie that needs to be in San Francisco. He just wasted this effect to set it in another city. Like what? Why?
It's such a terrible green screen job too.
Oh yeah, it really is.
The rooftop scenes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but look, there's the Golden Gate Bridge. We're obviously in San Francisco.
Like it literally looks like he used footage from the opening of Full House.
You know what the reason why that movie cost so much money is apparently he bought all the equipment. Usually, you know, productions like this they just rent equipment out, you know.
Uh-huh.
But he actually bought whatever millimeter camera and then he bought an HD camera.
Oh yeah, I remember in the bonus features on the DVD he talks about that where like it's the first movie ever to shoot in 35 millimeter and HD at the same time, and I don't. That can't possibly be right.
Like, see, well, he believed in his vision.
Well, that's and this is
at least somebody did.
I don't think I've ever watched a movie and really believed that. I mean, ever that a studio should have intervened and not let the artist tell the movie the way he wanted to tell it. It's the first time I really wished that the Suits had stepped in and chopped this movie to pieces.
Really? See, if I were a movie Hollywood mogul, I would donate $20 million to Tommy Wiseau and just see what he comes up with.
Just go. Just do whatever you want, man.
Do it.
Sky's
and
the
do
limit.
It with confidence.
You can have our big stars. We'll give you Brad Pitt, Bruce Willis, whoever you want. Go.
Oh my god, that would be amazing.
So these big midnight showings, they do like a Rocky Horror thing, right? Like there's a audience response, like a scripted response type thing, and you throw stuff and what do they do?
They throw plastic spoons at the screen.
why do they do that?
There's some scenes where you'll see in the background, you know, of the room. Uh-huh. there's like a framed spoon. Close enough attention, like it's just the most random thing.
I noticed it because the Riff Trax guys pointed it out, but I might not have. I might not have caught it.
It's pretty small. I guess someone really noticed it and just brought it up, and it got to that point where it became mythical.
It's a funny thing to notice. I mean, I'll give them that, but.
Well, I mean, it's a weird thing to put in the movie.
They were probably looking for something that didn't offend their eyes, and they focused on that spoon.
What can I look at that isn't Wiseau ass? Ooh, spoon!
Oh.
Thank God.
Yeah. And Wiseau's back, though. You see, like, in those sex scenes, you see his back? Like, Jesus Christ, what happened to that? Oof. It looks like... Oh.
So, I mean...
He had an accident with a tractor or something.
So now, do we even know, like, how old he is? Like, isn't he, like, most everything about him is a mystery, right? Like, he won't say where he's from. He says he's American. Leave it at that.
Tommy Wiseau is as old as the hills.
but I would guess him at, okay.
He's like Brigadoon. He appears once every generation.
Wikipedia puts him at 41. That would have been about my guess, actually.
He's a hard 41, if that's how old he is.
Yeah, he looks like 41 after he went through a hell of a lot of crap.
Yeah,
I mean, you've seen the movie poster for this move for this one, right? You know that shot of him looking dead.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Scary. It looks like he just got beat up, and he's, you know, they photographed him, and he's looking dead at you, like he's ripping into your soul with his eye.
Well, from what I hear, and this could be apocryphal, I don't know. One of the reasons this movie started becoming so infamous, and Pat, I know you're more down in San Diego, but you might know, being in sort of the general Southern California area. He bought like the side of a building or some, you know, some major.
He had a billboard in on Highland Avenue in L.A.
Someplace very, very prominent.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was up for like a year or 2 years or something.
Yeah.
Something. Oh, man. So much that everyone in Hollywood at some point passed by this and finally just said, well, what the hell is the room?
Oh, yeah.
And from what I understand, that's how it first became this thing. Like it got off, like people started checking it out because they got tired of looking at this billboard and just, what the fuck is this thing?
I mean, I guess it worked then.
Yeah.
Well, it's been sitting there for 5 years. I mean, he must have had a lot. I think he spent a good amount of that $6 million on that billboard.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. And I know he's moved on. I know he's working on a, he calls it a sitcom. It looks about as funny as The Room. Like when he's trying to be funny, now it actually like looks serious.
Neighbors.
Called The Neighbors, yeah. And I've seen clips of this on YouTube, and it looks like if you took the sensibility that made The Room, if you want to call it a sensibility, and tried to make like The Office. That's what it looked like to me.
Oh god.
Yeah, it did not look funny, to be honest with you.
No, there's a gay guy that strips down to his little shorts and he's doing a little dance. And, wow. It's just wow.
Yeah, there's something weird about his hair in those clips though.
Oh right, like, yeah. He's got like that wig on, yeah.
Wow. Tommy, what happened to your hair?
Fantastic. Oh, and the other, I guess what...
What are you talking about? This is my natural hair.
This is my American hair.
It's always been like this.
And I guess the other big thing that kind of pushed it over the top, like popularity-wise, was I guess they showed it on Adult Swim 1 year.
Yeah, for their April Fool's Day thing.
That's
the April Fool's Day this year. Last year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I actually heard you talking about this when you came out for Emerald City. Pat, you were talking to somebody about it, and I'm like, what movie is this? And I kind of like, I don't know. I'm out of the loop. I don't know. But and it ended up that's what you were talking about. And, I guess that's what got a lot of people really curious. Cause,
and there have been a lot of there's been a lot of write-ups in various entertainment magazines about it in the last couple of years because a bunch of celebrities were in, comedians and all these other people were into that movie.
Sure.
And they've been spreading it around. And then next thing you know, everyone just started picking up on it. And next thing you know, Tommy also was counting money again.
Yeah. Yeah. And like Laurie says, I mean, he'll go do Q&A. Like, obviously it hurts him, but he'll go do Q&As before people tear his dream to shreds. And I'm sure he's counting the big fat paycheck as he's, walking away crying. So.
Oh, yeah.
He's crying away at the bank.
No kidding. But really, I mean, the guy obviously can't write for shit, can't direct for shit, can't act for shit. But marketing wise. Knowing enough,
I think he accidentally happened upon this.
No. Yeah. No, knowing enough, like this does. I will give him credit for being smart here to say, you know what, people are laughing at this. It was a comedy. I meant to do it all along. Like that takes some balls, really.
How many people has that fooled, though? I mean,
okay, that's a good point.
I don't think it matters if people are just going.
Yeah. I think he's starting to believe it himself. So someone has to.
Well, it's a simple actor's trick. If you say it enough, you start to believe it. That is fantastic. So anything else, Pat? This is the only thing I think that you know inside and out more than Shake Hands with Danger somehow.
No, you know what I love about this movie is how they introduce random characters in and out and, for no reason.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember there's a character there who was a psychiatrist?
Oh yeah,
Apparently, and the random couple who has sex on their couch.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and
where'd they go to?
The mom that comes in with cancer.
Yeah. What happened to the cancer? They just stopped caring about it at that point.
Oh, and the drug dealer dude up on the roof comes up and threatens the guy, and then just nothing happens with that again. Just that thread.
Yeah,
just...
that kid was really creepy.
Yeah, he was.
He wanted to. Why would he want to watch Johnny and Lisa have sex? What?
Just leave me alone with him.
Oh, yeah. That's probably the most horrible suicide I've ever seen.
Yeah, and that's really, I mean, that was the sort of the punctuation on this whole, like, I'm such a great guy and my girlfriend's such a bitch. Well, I'll show you all. Look what you've driven me to. I'm fed up with this world.
I don't have a friend in the world.
Yeah.
Everyone betray me. I fed up with this world. Wow.
But we should say, yes, what, like 30-40% of this movie really is sex scenes? Like,
yeah.
It's
oh, God, at least.
Not quite half, but close to half.
The same one over and over again.
It basically, like, from different angles and from different...
Yeah, it's the same one. Even, Lisa and Johnny had, what, like, twice or something? Three times? And it's pretty much the same... They're pretty much wearing the same thing. Like, Lisa has the same makeup on, and then it takes place at different times and, different days.
They change the lighting, but it's obviously the same shoot. Yeah. But then don't they do it again with, what's his name, his Beardo friend?
Mark.
Yeah. Mark. Isn't there a couple of sex scenes there, too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All I know is, like, going into this movie, all the parts that aren't horrible sex scenes are really funny. Like, so bad they're funny. Mm. But you will feel kind of squirmy and awkward waiting for the sex scenes to end.
Eventually bored.
Yeah. I don't know how you can get bored with, you know, watching people have sex, but there you go.
There it is.
It's, no, you're not bored. You're terrified because what is he doing? What is he poking?
Well, yeah, like Laurie pointed out, he's obviously not hitting the target there. Where is he?
I just, the rose really creeps me out.
Oh, that first time when he...
Yeah. That first one? Like, oh my God, how cheesy is that?
Yeah, the very first time. The very first time after the sex scene, like the next morning, he rolls over, picks up a rose, a single rose at the side of his bed, and sniffs it. Like, wow, really? That's...
Wow. Beautiful morning.
So we covered all the horrible bases on this. Is that...
I just want to say publicly, I'm to all my friends who I've sent a copy of this to over the years, especially over the holidays.
Sure.
I'm very sorry. I'll make it up to you guys. Maybe reparations. I don't know, but I'm very sorry.
I will say, at first it was kind of hard to dig it up for a little while there. Like you had to go get it sort of through illicit means. Now it's officially out on DVD.
Yeah, I had to buy mine in a paper bag at first.
But I would not recommend, and you guys may say differently, but I would not recommend watching it without the help of Mike Nelson, Bill Corbett, and Kevin Murphy. I could not watch it.
Well, you should watch it once without it. I have to disagree with you there, Al.
Maybe if you go see one of those midnight showings, like if you got a crowd around you.
It's fun to have a group of friends. Even if you're at home, just bring like, I don't know, get like six friends or something and see. It'll be like survival of the fittest. Whoever stays at the end, you know, wins a prize or something.
That's fair. Well, along the same lines of you apologizing, I got to apologize to Dave for the same thing, because I made him sit through it without any kind of anything. I even walked out of the room a few times. You're on your own here, Fields.
I got to go. Don't you dare get up.
Yeah.
See, Pat introduced me to the room, and I cannot be more appreciative to you for that.
Oh,
I've gotten so much entertainment out of that movie.
Fantastic. Sarcastic Voyage, making friends. All right, Pat. Well, we got a couple other guests to bring on, so we're going to have to let you go here. But thanks for being with us, and thanks for all the great stuff you've been doing for us lately, and we appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. It's been fun.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
All right. The next couple of people we have to talk to are people we've also spoken with before. Dewey Bass, Annie Ladner, guys, thanks for being with us.
I feel like I was just here.
I think you live here. So we've been talking bad movies. Laurie's been nice enough to discuss some of the more horrifying things that she's turned up under some rocks. Pat Loika was just with us to discuss Tommy Wiseau's brilliant The Room. And you guys had something to say about a particular superhero movie that happened in the early 90s. Let's what do you get to say on that subject?
I guess I
thought you did.
Who asked John to talk about Roger Corman's Fantastic Four from 1993?
Yes, exactly.
The second worst comic book movie ever made.
Oh dear. Ooh,
second worst. What's worse than that?
Yeah.
X-Men 3.
Wow.
Nice.
First in the movie where Reed Richards' gray hair is spray painted on.
I think that's my favorite part of that movie, because sometimes it's spray painted on so clumsily it's actually on the top of his ears. You see like bits of silver paint.
He's just that much more distinguished.
Yeah, exactly.
His ears are getting gray.
So there's a particular reason you guys. I when I mentioned that we might talk about this movie, you said we gotta come on. What's the story?
I think Dewey was talking about it one night. I think he was trying to engage a group of us with Dr. Doom's hand gestures in this movie.
That's one of the things. It makes this very difficult to talk about.
Okay, yeah, you really do need the visual. There's a, I mean, and for those of you who don't know, the Marvel comic, The Fantastic Four, I mean, you got the Human Torch and the stretchy dude and I don't know. Matt, you're the comic guy. Who's...
Okay, you have Human Torch, Stretchy Dude, Rockman, and Disappearing Girl.
Right.
Mega Man?
Mega Man, yes. Mega Man, the Disappearing Girl. And, of course, Dr. Doom, the guy that they fight. You know, the greatest supervillain maybe ever.
Of all time.
That Dewey has been made to draw 7,000 times.
And who in this movie talks with his hands and through the muffling of his mask because they couldn't afford ADR. So you got... Richard. Oh, oh, oh. Best laugh in that movie.
He also likes to gently caress people's faces with slightly out of character.
I missed that. I do remember the gestures, though.
Richards, I remember your beautiful face.
I mean, early on, all right, so they're in college, you know, like they're supposed to be, when Doom has his accident, and they're getting ready to do the experiment where Doom has his accident, and they're walking down the road, and Doom can't wait to do it, and Richards really wants to, you know, test it again and make sure it's safe, and he's like, I gotta be sure about this, Victor. And it's hard to do this without visuals, but he looks deeply into Richard's eyes, and his hand comes up, and it's in this, like, hideous claw shape, and he starts slowly, ever so slowly, reaching towards Reed's face, and right before he's about to, like, pull his eyeball out, he drops his hand and says, okay.
Nice.
And you're left going, what?
Well, and then isn't there a point where he actually draws a number in the air? I want to make sure I remember this correctly. What was that? Like, you have 5 minutes or something like that? Was it?
He's threatening them with his incredible laser.
Right.
Which he's going to use to destroy New York City. And he beams his face onto their TV somehow. I don't know how that works. And he tells them he's going to blow up the universe or whatever. And he says, by the way,
that laser you saw. It's finished now.
Nice.
But then he tells him he's going to destroy New York with a laser, and then he says, you have 12 hours, and draws a number 12 with his finger.
Wow.
His sign for laser also happens to be to make a gun shape with one hand, and then with the other index finger, he draws a line from the end of his finger gun into the air. As if tracing the laser.
Right. I think you guys are doing a really effective job of painting this picture of a little bit of a theater of the mind thing here, where we can really picture. Nobody really needs to see this movie. You've pretty much you've got the picture.
Dr. Doom really wants deaf people to know what he's talking about.
It almost makes you think he's doing real sign language, but he's not. He just has no idea how to act with a mask on.
He's so tired of people not understanding him under that mask that he's just started signing at people and hoping that they get the idea. One thing I do remember about this movie, nobody that you've ever heard of is in it.
No.
Except there's a celebrity cameo at the beginning. It's like Reed's, and I haven't seen this in years, so Dewey, correct me if I'm wrong. I think you're the only one that's really seen this and knows it. I think it's like Reed's mentor, like when he's being taught at university, is Punky Brewster's dad.
That's true.
Whoa.
Also, he also played the Commandant in the Police Academy movies. That guy. George Gaines, I think his name is. And that was their only celebrity cameo. And he was only on there for about 5 minutes, because they probably couldn't afford the great Punky Brewster's dad for more than 5 minutes.
That's actually what he goes by, too. He's just known as the great Punky Brewster's dad.
Right.
It's on his IMDb.
Right. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
I think that may be the first time you ever promised a link to something that doesn't exist.
You know what? If you people have proved anything, we can make it exist. Okay, so you got these people, you know, this superhero team with all these different powers. You got the guy who can catch on fire, and they got by with what, like crappy like animation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like literal animation.
Right, like a little cartoon fire guy, right?
Until the very end, when he's an incredibly bad CG man who punches out a laser.
Well, now, mind you, this is 1993, before CG had really come into its own. But, you know.
And when
but
laser punching was really popular.
There was a huge laser punch. I mean, Laurie was earlier talking about punching, you know, the animal punching craze. Where, like in Conan, when you know, punch the camel. And what else? You had an eagle punch, was it?
Yep. An eagle, yes.
Right.
A horse as well. So I love animals, but I just like it when they get punched in the face. What can I say?
Well, but I think that sort of naturally led to America's fascination with laser punching. I mean, that was
its eventual evolution into its love of punching laser eagles.
I had a whole collection of laser punching pogs.
Right. So okay, so then you got the thing, which is he's a guy made of rocks.
Or in this movie, a orange rocky ninja turtle.
Right. Now I do you and I have disagreed on this before. I think for that movie's $10 budget, I think he looked okay. He didn't look great or anything, but you know,
his mouth didn't move with what he was supposed. Like they put too much animation in his lips.
Here's
like he would say something, and his lips would move 10 times more than.
I can see. Here's the thing. You had by this point there weren't a lot of good comic book movies. Period. Like Tim Burton's Batman at the time, we didn't know any better. That was all right. The Richard Donner Superman, that was okay, but that was about it. Marvel had nothing. I mean, you had the Dolph Lundgren Punisher movie where he had a little metal pin with the skull like on his lapel.
It was like a keychain or something.
Yeah, like look. Otherwise, he's just a guy with guns and it's no connection to it at all. You had the great Captain America movie where he's in the costume for the first 5 minutes, and then you come to the present and he doesn't wear the costume anymore, and the Red Skull has gotten plastic surgery, so it looks like a normal guy.
And he's Italian.
Right.
And his superpower is being able to fake being sick so he can steal someone's car.
Oh, yeah. He does that twice.
The best part of that one, real quick, the best part of that Captain America movie is the very beginning. It's the 40s, and the Red Skull's about to launch a giant missile to destroy everything, and he's got Captain America tied to it. And Captain America, he walks too close, and Cap grabs his wrist right as the rocket's about to go off. And the Red Skull does what anyone would do in that situation. He cuts his own hand off to get free.
Nice. Well, those fascists, they're hardcore, you know. I just remember being so like, yeah, that was a bad movie, but I at least show the Red Skull. And no, they only showed him for 5 minutes and then he got plastic surgery. And I admired this. I mean, it was a terrible movie. Roger Corman never made a good movie to save his life. But, you know, at least the Thing was the Thing for the whole movie. You know what I mean? He was a big guy made of orange rocks like the whole time.
No. He changed back to normal for some reason.
Oh, did he? Damn it!
In one of my favorite scenes, Doom has Alicia Masters held hostage.
Which, from the comics, his blind girlfriend.
Thing's blind girlfriend.
Right. Yes.
Deeply overacted blind girlfriend.
Oh my gosh. The faces he made.
Maybe Doom was signing to her and just didn't quite get it.
But he's got her held hostage. And the best line in the movie. So well acted. She goes, Ben, no! I love you.
Nice.
After which she immediately turns into his regular human form for some reason.
Oh.
He turns back into Ben and then back into the Thing for no reason.
Just because the power of I love you.
Nice.
That's another one. She's being held by the Jeweler, which is like a combination of Mole Man from actual Fantastic Four comics and the Leprechaun, the horror movie, the Leprechaun.
Nice.
And Doom comes in there because he needs to steal this diamond that he's got or whatever. And he shows up and the guy's henchmen start shooting at him. And this is the guy who's been, you know, overacting with his body the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
He makes some interesting choices. So the guys start shooting machine guns at him and he's got bulletproof armor on. He's going to deflect bullets. And the way he chooses to do that is by doing all these wrestler move flexes.
Wow.
It is so funny.
That's fantastic. Well, now, we should mention, for the record, this movie never got released. This the studios or whoever funded this had the good sense to say, whoa, no.
The true Hollywood story on this movie is the rights to the Fantastic Four were held by a German company. They were about to expire. And so, as a desperate last-bid attempt to try to keep the rights, they got Roger Corman to make this movie for $1.4 million, which to him was a big budget at the time.
Oh, yeah. Now, Roger Corman, like, he's done a lot of Mystery Science Theater-style movies. He's done a lot of crap. But Roger Corman, if I understand correctly, is the only director and producer in, like, Hollywood history to consistently make a profit because his movies just cost no money.
Mm-hmm.
And studios that only look at the bottom line say, well, this guy makes his money back and then some every time. So that's why they keep letting him make films. And that's
so this FF was only made so that company could keep the rights. They had no intention of ever releasing it.
Oh, really?
They didn't tell anybody making the movie that. They just went ahead and said, here's your 50 cents. Go make the movie. And then while they were making that, the guy who ran that studio actually got the funding and started trying to make a real Fantastic Four movie, but it never happened.
That's a shame.
And what I love about all that, when I was a kid, this count in what, 90, 91, 92?
90, 93, I think. 93. I don't know.
Okay. I bought my first Wizard that year, and it had a huge article on the upcoming Fantastic Four.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading interviews. Sci-Fi Universe or like one of those sci-fi magazines, and they would have they'd have clips of it, like pictures from it as well.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. That was what everyone on the set said.
But this thing never officially saw the light of day. It is out there, and as bad movies go, I can't think of a better one to, you know.
It's on YouTube in its entirety.
Wow.
Yeah, that's true.
Very nice. Well, we'll definitely link to that. So, guys, anything else on this topic, or have we pretty much covered all the bases?
Another great thing about this movie is its entire score. I would say that the music for the film is 80% shamelessly stolen from Star Wars, and then the rest of it is evenly split between shamelessly stolen from Indiana Jones and Superman.
Nice.
Like it's not the same music, but if you've ever watched any of those movies, you'll know what you're listening to.
Sure, and all of America has watched all of those movies. So
right. So exactly. That's what I'm saying. There's no subtlety at all.
Very nice.
And the end song is a romantic ballad sung by Stan Lee.
Nice. Well, guys, thanks for being on. I do appreciate it. And Annie, I'm almost certain we have something of Scott's that you're going to have to come back and react to shortly. Oh. So I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon.
Sure.
But,
you do.
All right, guys. Thanks. All right, so that pretty much covers it. Laurie, is there anything? I mean, I guess you've never experienced the horror that is Corman's Fantastic Four, and even as my ex-wife, I can't say I wouldn't wish that on you. So.
No, I've never seen it, and though the way Dewey and Anne were describing it, I wish I could see it maybe in snippets, but
well, like they say, it's on
YouTube. Presents it that way.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. If you want to just like jump in the middle and watch like clip, you know, 6 of 10.
That's what I did.
Yeah, like don't watch it from the beginning because it takes a little while to get going. You want to see the full ridiculousness. You know, just watch it. Like watch 1 of the 10-minute segments and then leave. Like never speak of it again. So I think that that more or less covers it. I think we've, obviously there's millions of bad movies out there. Mystery Science Theater could have gone on another, 100 years, but...
I wish it did. Yeah.
We all do. Thanks. But they're doing great things. Like I say, Riff Trax is a little shaky when they do the newer movies, but they're figuring that out, and they're doing some good public domain stuff. They actually did a live thing of Plan 9, which is a great, Like, Plan 9, obviously, but it was great. Like, it was, they filmed it live somewhere down south. I don't think it was Austin, but I think it was, like, Memphis or, like, one of the big, big southern music cities is why I'm kind of thinking of those two together. I think it might have been Memphis.
Nashville?
Maybe Nashville, that's what I'm thinking, yeah. They did a live event, and then they beamed it out to all these movie theaters, and you could watch it live. You're not there, but it's still live, and, I went to that. That was very cool. And then the other team for Mystery Science Theater, the Cinematic Titanic guys, those guys are doing it right. Those guys are doing the old, like, horrible, 70s, movies and, like, just the,
oh, yeah.
The one. They did a live event as well, and they did, I think it was called East Meets Watts. It was like it was basically like a 70s version of Rush Hour.
Wow.
During the first sort of big wave of like Bruce Lee kung fu fascination, they had like a Chinese guy come to America and team up with like a,
with you.
Yeah, no, not Watts. Like Watts in LA where all the, where all the people who cross themselves before bad things happen are. Now he teams up with like a, like a jive turkey type, and wow, it was bad.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Gotta love the ethnic mix match comedies.
Fantastic. So, Laurie, that's pretty much all the time we got. Anything else? Anything we need to cover? Anything?
No, I'm pretty tapped out for tonight. You should give me a call in another couple of months, and I'll see what I can come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to have you back. Mm, and,
yeah.
Thanks for being on. And
yeah.
That's it. We're gonna stop talking now.
The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is published every Tuesday and Friday and is available via iTunes or on the web at sarcasticvoyage.com. Detailed show notes, related links, and alternate file formats are also available on the web. That website again is sarcasticvoyage.com. Follow Matt and Al on Twitter. They are, respectively, at RobotMatt and at Algar. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com. An on-air response is guaranteed. All material contained herein is the intellectual property of Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and the featured guest, unless otherwise noted. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is a trademark of Algar Productions, copyright 2010. I'm fed up with this world, Butthorn.